This is the 16th Naman interview recorded on 19th June 2014. In these interviews, we listen to personalities in the domain of human-computer interaction with ideas that deserve a closer look. My name is Johannes van der Meulen of Naman. Today we have Andrew Harder. Andrew Harder is an experienced strategist and a design researcher. He is currently the head of user research for the UK Ministry of Justice Digital Services, where he has set up a team that brings insight and empathy about citizens to the heart of new public-facing digital services. Before the Ministry of Justice, or the MOJ, Andrew worked for Nokia as a researcher working on hardware and software concepts for emerging market consumers. He's also consulted for clients as diverse as a chat app, a fashion startup, and television manufacturer. You can read more about Andrew on his blog, www.andrewharder.com.
In my experience, consumers' expectations of government digital services just keep rising. I mean, in the UK at least, we see that 84%, I think, of households have access to the internet. And if you drill a bit further, you see that over 73% of individuals are on the internet every day. So, you know, in the UK, the internet is just part of daily life for many, many citizens in the UK. And what do people expect? They expect all of their web services to be as good as the best web services. They expect everything to be as good as Google or as good as eBay or as good as Facebook. And there's a really, really big challenge that we face as the government to make digital services that are compelling and that meet those expectations. I think there's a few things that make it particularly challenging for government above and beyond what private, you know, large private companies face. And there's some really good work that's been done by Mike Bracken and the rest of the team at the Government Digital Service that has educated me about this stuff. So I think a few of the biggest challenges that we face in the Ministry of Justice are the fact that there's such a weight of history and process behind what seem to be everyday interactions. I mean, if we think about the services offered by the Ministry of Justice, we provide for the UK prisons, courts and tribunals, access to legal aid, and a lot of other services like the public guardianship. So purely from a user-facing point of view, we have a lot of challenges trying to address that. Internally in the ministry, we sort of acknowledge that we only see people, or we most frequently see people, when they're at a bad point in their life. So we don't see people when they're getting married, we see people when they get a divorce. We don't see people when they buy a house, we see people when their house is broken into. Or when, you know, when an elderly relative has died without a will, that's when you need our services. So it's this combination of it's one-off transactions for many people, and chances are you're already very vulnerable or you're already very at a very low point in your life that people are coming into these services. So that's one challenge specific to the Ministry of Justice. I think if we dig a bit deeper, though, there's some reasons that are inherent in government. A lot of the processes in Ministry of Justice are very, very rules-based, you know. There's a lot of responsibility on the shoulders of all of the operational staff because things that go wrong can be catastrophic for the people involved. People in courts processing personal information are quite rightly very scared of releasing information that shouldn't be released, the results of a family court decision or contact details of a victim. If they're marked private information by the courts, it would be catastrophic if they were released, and a host of other things that could go wrong in this environment. So it's only natural that the operations become very rule-based. And I think as well as reasons that are specific to us in the Ministry of Justice, Mike Bracken and the guys at the UK Government Digital Service have done some great work in analysing and publicising some of the challenges that we face. And he came up with this idea called the Square of Despair, just illustrating four key reasons that major change projects inside government fail. And they are there for really intractable reasons that challenge a lot of change in government. So procurement can get in the way, big IT services that cost a lot of money are often tied up with a lot of procurement hurdles, and the detail of those procurement hurdles completely dictates what time and money is available to work on the user experience and to satisfy the user needs. Another issue is security. So especially for us in the MOJ, we have a lot of information that is highly, highly secure. But perversely, this leads to a lot of people turning edge cases, which they're very worried about, into core functionality and deliberately seeking the most advanced security rating that they can. So while it's good to take security seriously, if you immediately escalate to the highest security level possible, you exclude a lot of other suppliers that could work with you on it, and you really limit your flexibility to actually deliver services. And if that's for an edge case, then that's completely not appropriate. Another example is chronically dissatisfied users. So this is certainly the case when you look at some of the government services out at the moment that don't meet our expectations. A lot of users of current systems are very unhappy. And certainly inside the MOJ, we struggle with outdated systems as well. So, you know, we're on old PCs with old software that are very slow. It's very, very easy to sort of give up hope in the face of dissatisfied users. And the final point can strike people as slightly counterintuitive, that sometimes money can get in the way. So obviously not having any money is a big problem. But conversely, having too much money can be a problem as well. And Clay Shirky made this point about the failure of healthcare.gov, or should I say the initial problems of healthcare.gov in the US, that maybe it just had too much money. So Mike Bracken's point is that any public service with a budget of over £100 million will face very, very hard, unique problems in getting over the line. So these problems can be, with that a large amount of money comes unrealistic deadlines and unrealistic commitments. It can come with an enormous scope. It can come with the ambition to replace a lot of existing databases. It can come with enormous procurement contracts. So simply put, you know, having too much money and being too big an IT project can doom services to failure. And that's certainly one critique that people have made of healthcare.gov. In the UK now, we have a central government body called the Government Digital Service. This is set up at the heart of government, and it's a group of about 200, 250 digital specialists that have taken on board the challenge of transforming the government's delivery of public services online. So they're doing a lot of different things. One of them is setting what they've called a digital by default service assessment criteria. This is all in relation to the ambition that every public service that we put online must be so good that anyone who can use the internet will prefer to use it online. So if you can use a government service online, it must be so good that you prefer to use it online. I think reflecting on my previous time in the government and the work that GDS did, there are two really big challenges in delivering, you know, public services that will meet people's expectation. One is that the user needs often don't come first. And the second one is that it's just so hard to actually deliver software. So we can use that to talk about linking to user needs at some point. But in terms of delivering software, a lot of the public services are delivered using a type of software development called waterfall, which broadly means that you know everything that you need to know, you've done all the analysis, you've understood all the security risks, you've, you know, scoped everything out to get through procurement, that you have the big plan to deliver the public services. And that falls foul of, you know, not being able to adapt to what situations really occur during the plan and delivering underwhelming results at a large amount of money. So instead, in the Ministry of Justice Digital Services, we use Agile as a way to deliver our software. Agile is fairly well known across the design and development community, and so I won't talk too much about it now. But I think what some of the strengths about Agile are that you can apply it thoughtfully. So rather than always just applying the rules of Agile as you've read them in the book, it really is a way of solving problems. And I think the key thing that's been most useful in my experience at the MOJ is linking a business outcome or an organizational outcome that we want to see, like lower footfall in court, for people that don't need to be there, with some kind of public service. So that's a great brief for an agile team to reduce people turning up to court who don't need to be there, and then giving them the brief to work on public services to achieve that business outcome, because that then frees them up to deliver whatever kind of service that they want or that will fit the bill in order to achieve that outcome. I mean, technically, when we dig into the nature of how it works, we have a strong idea about what it is that we want to build, which is called the product backlog. And then in each, we organize the whoever the team members are, whatever their capabilities are, in sets of 1 or 2 week very focused periods called sprints, which is just terminology. And then we deliver what we want to do in those 1 or 2 week periods. The good point about having short cycle times is that you can never get too far off track. You're always pretty close to bringing yourself back on track. So the outcome is that you have, with a lot of other work, you can make sure that you are regularly delivering working software into a complex environment. I think some of the challenges of Agile in this are fairly well known, but some of the challenges of delivering an Agile are that you never end up with an entirely finished product. You're always changing. And that's really baked into the heart of Agile, that you're always changing your approach, you're always changing your service offering. So for startups or other consumer products, that can be a great thing because you're always learning from the marketplace. I think inside a big complex organization like the Ministry of Justice, there are some fairly unique challenges. The Ministry of Justice is very risk averse. We have a lot of serious organizational responsibility on our heads. You know, the UK is counting on us to do some things right, like keep prisons secure, like deliver legal aid to people who need it. Some of the challenges are that if you're applying legal aid, you need to know exactly what it is that you're meant to be doing at any one point in time. And that means any change in the process is costly. So if I'm an operator checking whether someone's got legal aid, I need to know exactly what the cases are and how to use my tools at all times. You know, the amount of relearning it takes me to do one thing is set. So if I have to learn one new thing every 3 months, then that's a certain amount of work. I certainly don't want to be learning something new every 2 weeks. If we think about scaling out changes across the very complex organizations of the MOJ, so one of the challenges with Agile is because we're always looking to deliver working software, we need to account for the organizational reality that some changes in working software will require training, it will require process change, and other forms of change management. So I think that's one challenge that we're still figuring out. And I think we need to, certainly at this stage, we haven't made radical changes to the operational reality. But what our business stakeholders want and what our staff want is improved results. So with no overhead of making regular change. So that's something that we need to balance. Because I think one outcome of Agile is that we are always delivering new slices of functionality. We're transforming service provision by adding incremental improvements to public services, and that can be quite challenging. One specific challenge we have about putting user needs at the heart of service delivery at the MOJ is that a lot of our users are in very vulnerable states. So in any research, you need to make sure that you're not going to harm your research participants as part of it. But for a lot of commercial research, this isn't really a concern because someone may be in a very vulnerable state, but if you're interviewing them about an energy company or their television, then you're not really going to risk many concerns. At the MOJ, however, we interview people about their prison visits, about law cases that they're making, about elderly members of family who may no longer have mental capacity. We have to be very, very careful to behave ethically when we're conducting research with our participants. So we have a few principles that we always make sure that we follow and that we consider. One is informed consent. So it's simply that people know what the interview will be about, they know what the topics that we'll cover are, and they know that they can stop the interview or not answer any questions that they want. And that's actually quite a challenge to convey, because while it may seem self-evident to us as researchers that that's the case, we are also representing the Ministry of Justice, you know. So many people may not quite understand how we are different from a judge or a police officer or a prosecutor. Even in less formal settings, they may not understand the differences. Another principle that we apply is confidentiality, which means that we just avoid revealing any personal information about people where we possibly can. And this means anonymizing information as we process it, so anonymizing people's names as we analyze their data, but also making sure that no personally identifiable information is published as the result of our research. I think one challenging thing with our ethical approach is that all of this has to operate in a broader moral context of our responsibilities. So if someone admits that they've committed a crime, our broader moral obligation may require us to report that crime rather than keep the confidentiality. So it's very tricky stuff, and we make our guidelines as clear as we can to our participants. I think one really big challenge that we face in the MOJ is that when we go and interview people, we find so many needs that we could address. Generally, many people are unaware of what the law is, they're unaware of what their rights are, they don't know how to solve the situation that they're in, whatever their problem may be. So, for instance, when someone is losing mental capacity, many people are unaware what their options are before the person loses mental capacity or afterwards. And so there are literally so many things that we could fix about that process, so many things that we wish that we could tell people, that we could educate people in the course of building our service. And the challenge is that we have limited time, limited focus, and limited budget to release new services. So in one way, we really, really have to focus on choosing the most important thing to spend our time on, the thing that we can make the biggest difference to as a team of digital services experts, and making sure that we really make that change happen. Because we now sympathize so much with the bigger picture, I feel the commitment to really delivering a thing that makes someone's life better. And then more broadly, what we have to do is just stay disciplined about keeping up the list of other opportunities that we could pursue and making sure that the next thing that we focus on is the most important thing. Certainly in terms of broader work, we've discussed and are pursuing ideas like just linking people to relevant charities that are able to help out more. One responsibility we have is with people that need assistance to use websites, or people that can't use websites are excluded from using websites. And we're pursuing a number of different options to make sure that they can still get the help that they need. One project that we're working on at the moment is making a single reform to one process in civil claims. So civil claims are actions that are taken from one person against another person. And they're things like if you haven't paid your credit card bill or if you haven't paid your utility bill, then you might get taken to civil court for the company to get their money. And what we're working on is a system that will let landlords in certain cases take repossession of their property if their tenant refuses to move out. So one example use of that would be is if I moved to Belgium for a year and I leased out my house in London, then at the end of my year away, the tenant refused to move out. I would have to go to civil court to get them to move out. And I'd have to go through a reasonably complicated legal process to get them out. There are certain notices that you have to file in certain orders. What we're working on is, first of all, simplifying the process for the claimant, in this case the landlord, to enter those forms and fill them out. And we're seeing a lot of improvements that we can make to turning that form into using plainer English, to asking fewer questions and by asking more intelligent questions. And then from the results of that service, producing a paper form that the user can then post off to the court. So that's one way that we've actually minimized the impact that we've had on court while still delivering some benefit to the users. Because at the end of the day, it's the same recognized form that was being submitted.